Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Ancient and Medieval History. I'm your host, Catherine Loomis. Together with my husband, Paul, we hope to teach you about various aspects of ancient and medieval history, which includes some of the literature and folklore, my personal specialty. Our goal is to veer from the well-known standards, but there will be times we delve into such subjects. In these cases, it is our hope to teach you something new about old themes. This leads to today's episode, Dating Robin Hood. No, it's not a manual how to hook up with the man in tights, but an attempt to place the creation of the tales within a certain time frame. My master's thesis was on various aspects of Robin Hood, and I'm rather eager on the subject. I will have a few episodes on the famous outlaw, though I will give you a break between episodes and tackle other subjects as well. So, without further ado, on to Robin Hood. The modern reader is familiar with the Robin Hood story setting in Sherwood Forest around the year 1190, while King Richard I was king, but he's away in the Crusades. Back in England, however, the villainous Prince John ravages the land, and the heroic betrayed nobleman Robin Hood fights to protect the poor from injustice and keep England safe for the day King Richard returns home. Vivat! However, not one of these themes or settings is in the early tales. And that brings up the question of, what was the setting for the tales, and when were they created? Not only is it difficult to date the earliest written tales, as many manuscripts have been destroyed over the centuries, but it is also difficult to date the creation of the tales, as many early ballads were passed along through minstrels and oral tradition long before they were physically recorded. The first recorded mention of Robin Hood, of which we currently know, was in William Langland's text, Piers Plowman. Piers Plowman was estimated to have been written between 1370 and 1385. It states, "I can not profitly my paternoster, as the priest it singeth, but I ken rhymes of Robin Hood and Randolph Earl of Chester." Basically, the priest is saying he doesn't necessarily know his prayers or the Lord's Prayer, but he does know the tales of Robin Hood. As early as the 14th century, we have evidence of the knowledge of the Robin Hood poems, partly because of Piers Plowman. Yet, even with this early written acknowledgement of Robin Hood, it is very difficult to figure out just how old the tales are. The earliest recorded tale of Robin Hood is the tale Robin Hood and the Monk, which is estimated to have been written between 1450 and 1460. There is no king mentioned in the story, however, so it is difficult to place based on the politics of the time. In the tale A Guest of Robin Hood, however, a king is finally mentioned. Originally, the tale is assumed to have been written around 1400 or even earlier, yet it was eventually decided by scholars that it was written sometime after 1450. In one line, there is the first mention of a king in a Robin Hood tale, and it says, "Of Edwarda, our comely king." Again, this doesn't fully date the actual tale, because in England between 1272 and 1377 there were three King Edwards. That's a 100-year span. The Robin Hood historian Stephen Knight explains the difficulty of deciphering which King Edward. Though a king appears several times, he's named only in one early text and only as Edward without any defining number. The best candidate is Edward III, who reigned from 1327 to 1377. Based on the fact that a number was not used to determine which king, it is probably safer to assume that the king was Edward I, as he would not have a number in his name until a successor followed with the same name. Subsequent Edwards would already have distinguishing numerals in their title. In 1852, antiquarian Joseph Hunter surmised that the ruler and a guest of Robin Hood was Edward II. As author J.C. Holt reveals, Hunter established, first, that the circuit of Edwards our comely king through the royal forests of Yorkshire and Lancashire and thence to Nottingham, as described in A Guest of Robin Hood, fitted only one known royal progress, namely that made by Edward II between April and November 1323. Secondly, that subsequently to this journey, between 24 March and 22 November 1324, a Robin or Robert Hood appeared in royal service as one of the porters of the chamber, and thirdly, that a Robert Hood with his wife Matilda figured in the court rolls at the Manor Wakefield in 1316 and 1317. It is interesting to note that Hunter connected the listed name of a Robin or Robert Hood in service to the crown to back up his claim that the king in Guest of Robin Hood was Edward II. It is not uncommon for scholars to search for men with the same name as the legendary hero and date the tales in that fashion. However, Robert is and was a common name and cannot support such claims alone. The coincidence that the aforementioned Robin's surname was also Hood is also not strong enough to support Hunter's connection. If the tales were already in circulation long enough, it is very possible that a person could change their name to associate themselves with the hero. Such is the case proposed by David Crook in his article. Crook states other scholars cited historical Robin Hoods in the 13th century as possible influences for the tales. One such man was a Gilbert Robin Hood, who appeared on the rolls in 1296. This shows that long before Hunter's Robin Hood, the name was combined as a surname and not so rare as to only belong to one or two possible candidates. David Crook also points out that Dr. J.R. Maddicott suggested the tales first came about in the 1330s, a generation or so before the unequivocal references to Rhymes of Robin Hood in the Bede text of Piers Plowman in 1377. Maddicott also attempted to associate real authority figures with those mentioned in A Guest of Robin Hood. He connected the character of the Abbot of St. Mary's with Thomas de Multon, who was the Abbot of St. Mary's, York, from 1332 to 1359. The Chief Justice, he said, was Geoffrey Le Scrope, who was Chief Justice from 1324 to 1338, and John de Oxenford was the Sheriff of Nottingham from 1334 to 1339. To place all three real men in their respective roles, as mentioned in A Guest of Robin Hood, the tale must have been dated between 1334 and 1339, further confirming his belief that the tales originated in the 1330s. This idea is too speculative, though. Oxenford was a corrupt sheriff, as history has recorded, but the theme of a corrupt sheriff, whether true or not, could easily fit into any time period, even if the current sheriff was incredibly honest. Positions of power are usually scorned, as many people feel those in charge are not doing enough for them or taking advantage of their position. Even those who do wrong, such as criminals, may not see their actions as crimes and will scorn the law for punishing them. So once again, this connection to actual persons and dates is very difficult to prove. It only works in idealistic theory. There is also the fact that law books in 1331 showed just how ingrained the Robin Hood myth already was. This is back in 1331, before, supposedly, Piers Plowman was even written. According to Holt in his article, The Origins and Audience of the Ballads of Robin Hood, in the 14th century, indeed, rogues and thieves were sometimes colloquially described as Robert's men. In 1331, the phrase was incorporated in an act of Parliament. If such a phrase was already in the laws at this point, the myth of Robin Hood had to have already been around for a while for it to be incorporated in the common vernacular. In the medieval underworld, author Andrew McCall suggested a span of years as being at some point between de Montfort's rebellion in 1265 and the Peasants' Revolt in 1381. The idea is that between these two rebellions, the poor had a hero that would provide them succor when they most needed it. In 1349, the plague caused a shortage in labor, and the peasants were in the position to demand the abolition of serfdom and the laws that fixed wages. After the peasants' revolt and the plague, the peasants gained a voice, and a character like Robin Hood would enable them to form a band to stand up for their assumed rights. The mention of the plague brings up another chance to narrow the tales. In the early stories, not once is the plague mentioned. This makes it difficult to believe that the tales came about after the epidemics hit, as this was a very, very important and big part of medieval history. One of the major characters in A Guest of Robin Hood is a knight whom Robin aids. When talking with the knight does mention the Crusades, yet he does not once mention thousands of deaths from an unknown black plague. This will help us narrow the tales just a smidge more. The eight major Crusades were the most important in history out of numerous crusades that were attempted, and they were dated between 1095 and 1270. The last major crusade was in 1270, led by St. Louis IX of France. Edward I returned from a crusade when Henry III died, and then he ascended the throne in 1272. Therefore, in theory, the stories couldn't have originated much later than the 1270s, otherwise the memories of the crusades would not have been as fresh and strong to play as big a role in The Guest of Robin Hood. In A Guest of Robin Hood, there is also a line that talks about Robin's visitor, the knight, being a knight by force, A true way thou wot a made a knight by force. This refers to the practice put into effect by Henry III in 1224. Knight of force refers to the practice of distraint of arms. This means requiring military tenants who held £20 per annum or per year to receive knighthoods or pay a compensation. After Henry III, Edward I continued this practice and ordered that those who either held lands that were worth £20 a year or held a knight's fee of £20 a year, having that much income, were to become knights by Christmas 1278. This again helps narrow down the time period of Augusta Robin Hood and the other Robin Hood tales. More than likely, they came about between around 1278 and 1370. While they may have originated earlier, the popularity of an Edward as king would have been rather odd since there had yet to be a King Edward. One side note that's rather amusing was, in a desperate attempt, Holt discusses one scholar who went so far as to invent a complete pedigree for the outlaw. In 1746, Dr. William Stukeley, a Lincolnshire antiquary, took random information out of William Dugdale's Baronage, which was compiled in 1675. With the name Stukeley created false marriages, added false relatives, and changed the landholdings of established families. He even changed the date of Robin Hood's death to 1274 to suit his fabricated timeline. This was all later proved quite fanciful, but by that time there was a blind following of Stukeley, and there were many who had to be convinced that this was not true. All of this helps show just how difficult it was to date the Robin Hood tales, be it because there were certain people making up false information, such as Dr. William Stukeley, or the fact that a lot of the tales were orally passed around, and not all the tales necessarily came from England. There was a tale of poem about a shepherdess and a shepherd, Robin and Marian, which actually originated in France. There were actually also a number of other tales that were either similar or almost exactly the same that were created or originated around the same time as the Robin Hood tales were recorded, and some much earlier, such as Hereward the Wake and Gandolin. These tales could have been precursors to Robin Hood, or they could have evolved along with Robin Hood and branched off into their own little slot. Again, because there could have been such outside influences, it is very, very difficult to say exactly when Robin Hood was created, or if it even was created as its own entity, or like if I said before, it happened to evolve and then branch off in its own area. Well now, this is our first episode of Ancient and Medieval History, and I'm not exactly sure exactly what format I would like to use, but I'm pretty certain that I would like to suggest a book each week. This week, since we are talking about Robin Hood, there is an excellent compendium that's put out by Team's Middle English Text Series, and it is edited by the Robin Hood historian Stephen Knight and Thomas Olgren. It is called Robin Hood and Other Outlaw Tales. It has many, many tales from the earliest recorded one, Robin Hood and the Monk, then the next one in the series, A Guest of Robin Hood, all the way up into about the 1800s. And it has the Anthony Munday plays from the 1500s, which is more than likely what everybody knows, such as Richard I, the King of England, Richard the Lionheart, and the Evil Prince John. That whole tale comes about more in the 1500s. Now, some of the earlier tales are in Middle English, but there are references on the side notes, so that if there's a word that's especially difficult, more than likely they have it there for you. However, I found that if you read Middle English out loud, you can usually figure out what it is saying. As you get more into modern English, then it's easier for the novice to read. You can visit our webpage at www.sportel.com/ancient. Sportel is spelled S-P-O-R-T-E-L-L. I apologize, at this point the podcast is piggybacking off of a page we have set up for our family back overseas in the States. However, if you go straight to the link I just said, you won't find silly pictures of children doing silly things. You can email us at history@sportel.com. We'd be more than welcome to hear anything you have to say, comments, suggestions, ideas. It was absolutely horrible and never go on the air again. But if you say that, please say it nicely. Next week, I'm going to continue on with medieval history. However, this is actually more my husband's interest area. Even though he specializes in ancient and classical history, one of his medieval heroes is Charlemagne, or Charles the Great, the Frankish Carolingian king and emperor. So I'd like to give a brief overview next week of Charlemagne, the first Holy Roman Emperor. I hope you have enjoyed this episode of Ancient and Medieval History and will join us again next week. Thank you very much for listening.